So there are several ways of looking at the human phenomena, the human condition, the human journey, health and illness, plenty of paradigms that are floating around. But today we'll take a look at it from the spiritual and more accurately Sri Aurobindo's viewpoint. It's not a viewpoint, it's a looking at life from a more total perspective, which is what we, when we use the word integral, that's what we mean. So how do we look at it, this human journey? This human journey is a very fascinating journey, very difficult, challenging journey. And we are born with a certain number of possibilities, certain things which are already developed to an extent and others which are yet to develop, yet to emerge. And we are given the gift of a basic order, unless there is a genetic problem or a hereditary defect. But by and large, a child is born and it's given a basic capacity to meet the immediate challenges, and there is a kind of order and harmony within the body. But as the child develops, life offers or meets us like a jigsaw puzzle. So it's not just a puzzle which is given to us in the school, but puzzle. And this puzzle, just like the ordinary puzzles which are given to us, the level of challenges keep on increasing as we navigate through them. Now here comes the capacities of the body. These challenges which come to life, people very often are frightened. They start blaming karma, God. God knows it's so easy to blame people. But basically, if we take a close look, these are challenges given for us to evolve. So basically, we are on an evolutionary journey. And each crisis is a doorway to evolve or to collapse. So they are the various challenges which come to us in the form of things from outside and the adaptation that has to come from within. So what really is required to meet this challenge so that we can go through it in with as minimal damage as possible? You can't avoid, anybody who is claiming that we have a permanent cure or a panacea for everything, to start with, is a hoax, because human body is imperfect, human beings are imperfect, and to have a panacea at this stage of imperfection will be to fix his imperfection forever. So that's what we are just discussing, that now we have those more and more artificially conditioned spaces, and then artificial mobile air conditioner, etc. So this is how artificially we have tried to take the challenge of life. And in this process, we shrink more and more because there is fear. We are not really adapting. We are taking the challenge rather as something which is frightening, a monster, and we try to shrink more and more. And the result is what we see today. Every technological advancement becomes a kind of biological amputation. On the other hand, life at some point grew very organically. There were challenges and the body brought out its own resources, resistance. It faced the challenge, went through its own set of ups and downs, and eventually when it succeeded, it was something very beautiful. When we go into the account of the ages past, we sometimes hear people live for 175 years. That was the age of Bhishma during, you know, in the Mahabharata war when he left his body. Krishna was 108 when he was fighting the war. Arjun was 70. And this, I'm stating it not just on one account, but on different accounts. So how did they maintain this kind of state? Partly because they took the challenge. Instead of shrinking or running away, they believed that the body itself can develop, adapt to these challenges. No challenge is given to us which is more than our capacity to adapt to it. And then there is the grace, of course. But because of an artificial way of so-called meeting the challenge, not evolving, rather than conserving ourselves, preserving ourselves, surviving, slowly we see that the vitality of the race begins to diminish more and more. And the more hospitals and doctors we have, the less we have the natural immunity. And all this, I'm sure many of us can relate with. I've grown up myself in a village environment, and I know very well what it means to even drink water from an open well, to live without the air conditioner. And life had its own set of beauty. And so first thing we need is the ability to adapt, which is what we have lost. So where does this ability to adapt come from? Ability to adapt comes when we live life, let's say, like a river. So what does the river do? How does the river adapt? So river has to know two things. This is what I feel all of us in the human journey of life must know these two things. What is our origin and where are we to go? If we know these two things, we'll be able to navigate through any and every challenge, physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual. And interestingly, as we define these two things, so is our life cabined into something small or vast. If I say my origin is my parents, my life is centered around small little mohalla, my little family and its needs. And my goal, if I say my goal is to, you know, create just wealth and make a name for myself in the society, then I am leading a very small life. But if I say my origin is the divine, now this is something I found very fascinating in Indian scripture. Whenever you read a Purana, it starts with, though it's a Purana dedicated to a god, it speaks about lineage of kings, but it starts from the creation itself. So why does it start from the creation itself? Somebody may say, what do I have to do with creation? Well, I have to do with creation because based on the creator, my existence is. It is something of the creator that flows in me. It is there in every element of creation. So when we look at life like that, when we connect to its origin, to the creator, then life assumes a very different meaning. We are empowered to a much greater degree than if I say I belong to my parents, I belong to my society, I belong to my village. True empowerment is when I say I belong to the creator. And creator is in everything, everywhere. It's, I use the word power of one, not the power of zero, power of one. Power of one is that we know that there is the one source everywhere in everything. It helps us to adapt amazingly to all the different situations of life. I could go on and go on, have a whole workshop on this. How we can adapt just by remembering this one little thought. And just to make it short, I would remind ourselves of the story of Prahlad and Hiranyakashyap. So Hiranyakashyap is the prototype of the today's modern scientist who is trying to master the various conditions because of which we may die. So he has taken a seemingly impossible boon, neither this nor that, nor weapon nor this, everything he has apparently in his checklist. Taken corona vaccine, yes. Taken hepatitis B vaccine, yes. Cholesterol test, yes. All the tests, he has done all that. And the impossible, he seems that now I'm invulnerable, and yet death finds its way. This one approach to life. Prahlad does nothing of that kind. Prahlad is his own child, and it's very interesting. The child of the ego is the soul in man. Ultimately, it emerges. And Prahlad simply knows the power of one. He says, Dad, I know you are my dad and so I respect you, but you are aggrandizing yourself in believing that you have mastered everything. And eventually, because Prahlad knows himself as a child of the one divine reality, he escapes through everything. It's a very fascinating tale with many asides. I'm not going into it. And this is what we see, an Indic approach where we adapt because we are aware of the origin. And secondly, because we are aware of the goal. If my goal is small and narrow, I'll be full of fear. If my goal is vast, a long-term project, often people ask this, oh, this happened to you in this department, this happened to you with this person. So I say, well, they are nobody but except the events I meet on the journey. There's a very beautiful passage from Sri Aurobindo's Savitri I would love to quote. One of the many favorite passages where he says, O king, that the events that meet thee on the road, though they smite thy body and soul with joy and grief, are not thy fate. They touch thee awhile and pass. Even death can cut not thy spirit's walk. The road, the goal thou choosest are thy fate. And therefore we have in India the idea of rebirth. It's the only idea which can explain things. Otherwise, it's all an absurd thing. Suddenly you are born with certain things, you die, and that's the finish. You wait for a post-mortem salvation and all that, blah, blah, blah. But basically, this idea that life is a constant evolutionary journey like a river. and the river is ultimately going to meet the sea. That's something so fascinating that one can learn to adapt with everything. And we have so many examples in Indian mythology. Meera, the other day I was discussing with somebody, what does Meera like? Meera's life teach her in the palace, outside the palace, this or that? She knows where she has to go. How does she adapt to all the multiple social, emotional, psychological, physical challenges she must have met, because she knows where she has to go. So this adaptability is very important. Of course, we probably someday will prove it. If we are inwardly adaptable, our genes, our heredity, our all those ribosomes, all of them, the RNA, the messengers, they all will eventually follow the same pattern. So one way to look at it, things are very fixed. You have this bacteria and you'll fall ill. But the other way to look at it is that this fixity appears right down below in the material level. But as we climb up the ladder of our humanness, this fixity begins to change into more and more greater and greater plasticity, and things can be changed because we are more and more empowered. So essentially, adaptability is one thing required. Second thing required is wideness. This is people who immediately break down, but they are full of fear. The most frightened creature is snake. And everybody is afraid of it because it exudes fear. It's itself full of fear. It shrinks. Except the cobra and mamba, they live in a hole. And they are just lying like this, literally crippled and crumpled up because they are so full of fear. So fear makes us shrink into a narrower and narrower state, and therefore it makes us paradoxically more and more vulnerable. But the vaster we become, the wider we become. Again, I'm holding back my temptation to bring out so many stories that I have read as a child. The wider we become, the more we are able to take on the challenge of life. And just one, because the serial is going on, Srimad Ramayana, and the well-known incident that Sursa comes as a challenge to Hanuman. And as Sursa increases in size, Hanuman also increases the size. Jo jo Sursa badan badhava, taas dun kapi roop dikhava. The
question I would ask. Talk of the fixity, you born with this particular fixity, but as you, over a period of time, as you grow, this elasticity begins to grow. So the gap between the speed of the evolution of.
Yes.
Narrows down.
So I am coming to that. Actually, we are, the human body as a child is growing tremendously. And why does it grow? Because it has this urge to progress. Where does it get it from? It looks at the adults. So first is physical progress. I must step into my father's shoe. It's a different story that when he steps, he realizes, my God, what... what a shoe it was. But he wants to grow. He looks at people around who can do things which the child cannot do. So this thirst for progress, as you have beautifully said, it's there inbuilt within the child. But what happens? We have fixed the limit of the progress. What is the limit of the progress? Your degree. MBBS, MD, Munna Bhai, and all those things. You are very happy that I have arrived. This feeling that I have arrived because I have a degree and a job is one of the most disastrous doctrines that are being, being given to children. I have a degree. Now the child has nothing to look forward to. He is now flattened, my family, and that's it. Whereas when you have a constant looking forward for something new, even at old age, so-called old age, there are lives beyond. There is still something to do. Oh, maybe I can realize the divine at the last moment of my life. Just look at the vastness of the landscape that opens. Then plasticity will automatically come. But the only problem there, as you rightly point out, is that can the body also move with that plasticity? Now, that is the ultimate problem. So, but first, what we can do? What we can do is our psychological being, our emotional being, for instance, somebody who wants to progress. Every little difficulty, every little pain, every little suffering becomes a means to a step boat to jump further. Because my goal is not this person's happiness or my happiness, or even if it's taken away, my progress, where I have to go, that can give me a leap board. So that's where, now coming back to the story, Hanuman knows where I have to go. I'm in search of that divine mother. So what does he do? When Sursa and both of them are, you know, expanded to a limit, then he doesn't say, oh, this is my promise. Look at the plasticity of Hanuman. Achha, he becomes like his tiny little creature, enters and comes out, says, see, I promised you and I have kept my promise. Hanuman is not trying to prove a point. He is not there to show that, look, I am going to take you by the fist. He says, look here, you are not my goal. Every time he says that, you are not my goal, my goal is elsewhere. If you help me in the goal, fine. If you don't help me in the goal, if you create an impossible obstruction, then I am going to remove you. So this strength that comes to us from the goal, I think one of the biggest problem of today is that we have lessened, limited, narrowed our goals to what extent. Sometimes I feel very, very sorry when I see children have goals like, I want to do this job, that job. How can job be a goal? Okay, why do you want to do a job? I'll earn a lot of money and I'll make a house. I don't want to say more. So plasticity comes when we have the goal in mind and the urge for progress. And that's what creates also wideness, because you are willing to explore the whole universe if need be to find what you are trying to find. Remembrance. Absolutely. Absolutely. When we say remembrance of the mother, yes. Why? Because that's the goal where we have to reach. Now when we do that, then life becomes beautiful everywhere. We live with the consciousness of the one and we live with that wideness, plasticity, everything develops. Except for the body is very challenging, because body is where the fixed determinisms of, we can use the word karma, or we can use the way life operates, nature, works maximum, because body has been created to provide a stable base. So a stable base cannot be fluid. So it's in the process it has fastened with strong knots. It's very interesting when we just look at the phenomena of the body. How is it fastened? Body is like a structure. No, every structure like this building, you have to fasten. You have to fasten with cement. How is the body fastened? I would just contemplate just for one moment. I'm going to say something very interesting which long back I felt. And body is fastened by strings of breath. Stop it for 5 minutes and entire thing will begin to crumble. Just think about it. Body is fastened by strings of breath. And then the fastening or rigid structures are reinforced by strings of attachment. So that body becomes more and more, it becomes so badly tied up. Nature wants it because it wants a stable base. But the problem is, once the stable base is secured, now body, if body has to participate in the, as you said, in the universal progress, then it has to have both. It has to have a certain degree of fixity, but also a fluidity with which it can follow the pace of universal progress. It's put very beautifully in one of the biblical phrases, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is not. It should not happen. And that can, it can be overridden if we have a very strong urge within to progress. Then the body is compelled to obey, and the body has been mastered. That's a whole science. And both Sri Aurobindo and the mother have described it at great length about this science, that first the entire body must be brought under the mastery of the mind. It is given to us. No, I am not going to feel it this way. There is a problem. There is a pain, but I am greater than my pain. There is a suffering, I don't deny, but the mind, my thought. And we see in when people go for in military training, how do they do it? They are not yogis, but they simply know that, well, extremes of conditions, still their mind gives a signal. I know people who have stayed hungry for days and surrounded with danger, real life stories, commando training, and yet they are able to master. So First step is to bring the body under the mastery of the mind. Because in human beings right now, before we talk about soul and spirit, mana prana sharira neta. Mind is the leader. We have not even right now evolved to a point, majority of us, that the body can be mastered by the mind. More often than not, mind is mastered by the body. So when people take a flight and come down, I recently took a flight from Kashmir to Delhi. What is the temperature? What is the temperature? I see. This is that state of affairs. It should not be. You should be able to enjoy that coolness and this heat. I'll give one example from Sri Aurobindo's life. Once Sri Aurobindo was given a meal and people forgot to put salt. So he was enjoying. And then, as always, samam brahmam. So, of course, we know the karakani when we read to what extent the mind and the spirit can master the body. So someone told him, but sir, later on when he tasted, oh my God, there was no salt. He said, but sir, there was no salt in it. And Sri Aurobindo says, yes, there is an ananda of tastelessness. There is an ananda of tastelessness. So this power, capacity of the mind, even if this we can extend, this was the entire basis of Indian culture. First 25 years, brahmacharya. What is brahmacharya? Not like only control of sexual energy. It was the ability to discipline ourselves in such a way that we can be very goal-directed. The mind should think what it wants to think. It should not be distracted by gossip, this, that. The heart should be able to feel in a one-pointed way. The life energy should be able to put out itself focused. One of the things which people lack today is focus. Mind is distracted, life is distracted. So it was taught, inbuilt in the system in a Gurukul, that you learn by the time you are 25, your mind has mastered the body. It is only when this has happened that now the mind says, okay, there is somebody greater than me, something greater than me, the spirit, the soul, the divine. Here it is, I give you. Then it works beautifully. But if the mind has not even mastered the physical body, then the action of the spirit is, I mean, spiritual consciousness is not easy. People often say that, you know, we pray, we call, there is the yogic force which cures. Why doesn't cure always or every time? And Sri Aurobindo gives a very nice example. He says, see, Agni has a power to burn. We can use the word Agni Shakti. But it doesn't burn always. It doesn't burn everything. If you have to burn iron, you have to raise the temperature to what degree? There are conditions. People walk on fire by applying certain kind of, you know, oil and other things. I'm not challenging the actual possibility. But it is known that, you know, there are ways. Or in a state of fit of excitement. Say in a war, you have an injury, but you are so much moved by the events taking place that you don't experience the pain. So this ability of the mind has not been fully explored. And therefore the body is in a state of inertia, which it is prone to, physical. That's how stability is created. So unless the body is open to the higher forces, it is very difficult. It can still happen because ultimately the higher consciousness is higher, highest. But it's like you may have the best teacher, but if your students are unwilling, you can't force them to sit with a stick and, you know, suddenly give a lecture to them. So that's the challenge. That's why in the ashram we have no meditation hall, technically, but we have the playground and the physical education. Mother says, she said, well, I'll do everything, but your body has to become receptive and open. So physical culture, which is coming up today in a big way, is one of the means by which the body can open to the divine consciousness, to the divine energy. Very clearly. And that's why it is important. Now people don't want to engage in it. So when you fall sick, if you can do nothing, pop up pills. I mean, that's a different thing. There's no magic. But if you really want a proper cure, then we have to take all this in a single continuum. Our thoughts impact the body, our feelings impact the body, higher states of consciousness impact the body, but they have to be receptive. So how do we make it receptive? This what the goal should be clear. Wideness, plasticity. The wider we are, the more receptive we are.
Last question. She has said somewhere that the last breath, you must work for me.
Yes. Absolutely. So beautiful. Yes.
So you constantly trying your body to become more plastic.
Yes. And it may mean two things. I know somebody also told me something very interesting about it. I'm forgetting his name. He was a doctor in GH. He also became I think he was the first dean of GH or whatever it was that time. A gentleman from Pondicherry. I've forgotten his name. A beautiful man. So he was in care for a long time. He left his body in 90s. And so he was telling me that once I asked mother that, you know, now I can't physically work much. So what should I do? Because this work is a very interesting thing. So work is not just physically working. It's not just holding on to a chair or a position. So mother told him, yes, it is there that beyond a point. But you can still invoke the divine within you and in the earth atmosphere. And that's a work you can do much better, which many cannot do. Because you are no more distracted. And I see the example of mother herself. So what does she do in 1955? She makes a trust. And slowly begins to withdraw. In 62, the mother goes to her room, never came down from there. And more she was letting others to do that kind of work. And she was engaged more and more in that work which nobody else could do, which was a direct contact of the body cells with the divine consciousness. So there comes a time, and if we understand, then again the adaptability. Sometimes we don't have physical work for various reasons. Some people feel very unhappy about it. But it simply means you have to change the mode of work, inner work, work upon our own being. So basically, till the last breath, we should be able to consecrate this breath to the divine. It's very beautiful. I have seen a couple of people, one person departing, I remember. And you know, who can do it? We have this traditional idea of yogis and all that. I know a person whom probably most of the people would have never heard the name in the ashram setup. So I was brought in touch with him because he had cancer which was spread all over. And I also don't remember the name. Actually, very incognito kind of person. He never became an ashramite, but he was working in the ashram department. He would say, I am mother's child. That's how he worked. So, when I went to see him, because people felt ki, you know, because he knows the cancer is spread over, he would be depressed, and so I was involved as a psychiatrist. But as the divine plan goes, it was a learning experience for me, because when I saw him sitting in the hall, reading a newspaper very happily, and he greeted me. So, he told me, you are the new doctor. I said, yes. So, I said, very hesitatingly, do you know, like, how are things? I know it has spread into my abdomen all over, and doctors say it maybe a couple of months, maybe 15 days. Very cool about it. So I thought maybe it's a denial. But as I met him every day, I realized that it's not denial. He is fully aware of what is what, but he was in a state of inner peace and bliss. Then his departure was this last breath thing, which I, you know, and that's how Shri Krishna gives the advice to Arjun that if you leave the body taking my name, then you get an evolutionary boost. You are on a fast forward track. I am using a modern language. So, I saw this man on the day, finally, I think 15-20 days. He was admitted. He was quite breathless. So, evening 6 o'clock. But he had developed a very good rapport in just 15 days with me. So, I asked him that, you know, what do you want? He said, no, I just want to sit now quietly. So, I said, your family is waiting. Wife and everybody, they want to meet you. He said, I still remember, I don't want to meet anybody. I just want to be like this. For me, it was one of the most difficult thing was to convey to the family, he doesn't want to meet anyone. And everybody heard it, listened. I said, you can pray, be outside. From 6 o'clock in the evening till 1 o'clock at night, he kept sitting. in Sukhasana. Of course, we had raised the bed so that he can recline. And then 1 o'clock, sister was passing by at night. He didn't call anything. Suddenly her eyes went towards him, and that the time his head gently turned to one side and he left the body. A yogic departure. Now, these are things where we can really say till the last breath, this person was working. How he was working? Being in the body, he was calling the Divine Mother, obviously. And because he was in contact with the Divine Mother, he was bringing this earth substance in contact with the Divine. That is the work. All this other thing is the paraphernalia. I am doing this work, I am doing that work, I am an instrument. All this is at one level nonsense. The purpose of all this is so that through the work, we bring the higher states into contact with the earth. And if we can do it, truly we have done what we were born to do as a channels which receive and transmit without distortion. The distortion comes from ego and desire and ambition. I am the doer is a distortion. Desire, I want to do it and get the fruits, people should recognize me, it's a distortion. Ambition, I have this idea, I must fulfill it in my lifetime. It's all these are distortions. But if you remain just open like this, let her flow through us, then when she flows through the body will change. I can give one last little thing, then I'll say that, see, body is like an instrument. As we said, from the yogic point of view, body is an instrument, it's a machine. It works like a machine. A machine which is albeit conscious, at least semi-conscious. So it's not just a robot, but the difference is it is a bit conscious. That's why it can learn things, it can change, because it's a partly conscious machine. It can grow more and more conscious. But this body, like an instrument, we can use it for good or we can use it for evil. It's like you have a sword and you can use it to defend those who are in need, or you can use it to further your ambition. So how you use it, based on that, the body evolves or undergoes the change. And I'll just take one example. We are given a beautiful instrument, unique instrument, which is not there in animals. Many things we have like animals. Certain things are much worse than animals. But there is something we have in us which is uniquely human. It's the power of speech. So if we use this capacity to speak, a very beautiful line, Kabir Das says, Vani aisi boliye, man ka aapa khoye. Auran ko sheetal kare, aap hi sukh de. Or something like that. Aap hi sital hoye. So what is it? It's yoga. Vani ka tap is one of the tap mentioned in the Gita. What is Vani ka tap? Speak truthfully but beautifully with love in your heart. Priyam, that's how it is. It's not sweetness. Oh, you are such a wonderful person. Not all that nonsense. But there is a way, not harshly, not condemning. People have imitated everything. But with truth in your heart, not necessary that we have to speak everything. Silence is golden, no doubt about it. But when we speak, it should be something which makes others also feel quiet, peaceful. And it gives peace, quiet to you also. This is, when we do that, many of the problems of the mouth will be taken care of. And I'm saying this with experience. What about the eyes? Again, we have phrase in the Upanishads, where it speaks about, we all recite it, no? Bhadram karne vishranyam deva. We are very happy, such a mantra. What does it mean? Always hear the auspicious. If you are hearing things which are evil, abusive things, send it away, move away. Don't listen to that. May I see the auspicious, see the beauty of life, see the good in others. But we are busy seeing the evil in others. And it is disaster, it creates disorder in one's own life. Often I say, there are people where love turns into hatred. So people ask why. I said, love doesn't go anywhere. Once loved, you can never forget that love. But what happens with us? We stop seeing that love and we start seeing the defects, and therefore it turns into hatred. Everybody has defects. So when we look at life, use the eyes, ears, touch. Yesterday I was saying that there is a touch which is the touch which is of refinement. Whereas there is a touch which is crude, grabbing, possessing. See, when people pull, often in Desiree I have to tell them, what you're trying, touching and pulling, that's not the way to touch. In MBBS, my teacher taught me how to hold a pulse. And I was holding it like this. He said, young boy, have you never held a lady's pulse? I said, sir, never had the good or bad fortune. So he said, this is how you should hold it. And it was an art. I can never forget. It was an art, the way he held it and taught me how to, I mean, all of us. I said, yeah, achha hai. I don't know whether I can ever hold a lady's hand like this. But he taught me something beautiful, that it is very soothing to the patient. That's why it's called the healing touch. Doctors used to do so much by caress. So all this is a whole science. If the body can be used to transmit beautiful vibrations, touch, smell, taste, we had a whole science that, you know, certain smells, we practice it in our, are repulsive to certain creatures. Smells like smoke attract some other creatures. That's a whole subtle science. We are not going into that. Tastes. Sattvic food, how does it taste? Rajasic food, how does it taste? We don't need to know cholesterol and all this. If you take a kind of food which is full of, that's why vegetarianism, especially when you chop off a creature, slowly giving it more and more pain, I don't know what it is called. What a vikrat, distorted mindset it would be. So animal is going through pain and rage, and then you eat it. All this will go into you. You will become anger prone. You will become full of rage because the rage of the animal has gone into you. So all these signs where the body has to be used in a beautiful way. It's an instrument given to us. Every part of the body, limbs, that's why it is said that when you go to a tirtha, every step that you take is like an ashwamedhi yagya. Leaving aside the exaggerations and ashwamedhi yagya and what it contains, a very beautiful thing. What does it mean? When you start a trip to a place, let's say to Pondicherry, so your meter to the divine starts from the moment you have conceived it and you have started buying the ticket. It's not just when you reach. When you reach is a grand culmination. Every step of the journey, inner journey also, is because it's done with that attitude. So when we walk, when we use the hands, when we use the mouth, all these are instruments given to us in a beautiful way, then life evolves, we evolve, the body evolves. And that's why we should serve the divine till the last breath. I think this could go on. Thank you so much. Yeah. But since we are sitting, if there is anything I can, we can take.
Are there challenges on psychic level?
Life is full of challenges at every level. I am using, I presume you are using the word psychic from in a certain specific sense of the occult, not as the psychic being. Because psychic being is a different entity. Yes, it will also have its challenges. So there are what is called as psychic attacks in the West, adverse forces, and this is very easy to understand. Behind everything physical, it's not physical or that. Behind everything physical, there would be subtle forces at work. Even atom is composed of subtle forces. Forces of attraction, forces of gravitation, forces of repulsion. They are forces, you don't see it. But phenomenally, you can understand, yes. You can calculate. So there are forces which are operating in the world. Forces that are benevolent to, they help us, which are known as gods and godlike energies. We nowadays use the word positive, it doesn't matter what term we use. And equally, forces and beings which create hurdles. But in the unitary view of life, those that create hurdles are also ultimately instruments of the one. They challenge us, and by challenging, they make us grow. When the negative forces challenge us, they make us grow strong. They make our faith steady. They make us learn endurance. And when the positive forces can also challenge, but in a different way, they may distract us. Are, this yoga is very long. This is a quick short yoga right next door. Do a $100 course. You will be catapulted into nirvana, 14-day nirvana. They also challenge us. We should be very careful. And these challenges are there to see our sincerity. It's easy to use the word, I have faith in the mother. Do I really have faith? They come to challenge us. And if we have true faith, we'll go through everything. Otherwise, we'll collapse. So they serve a purpose in the grand scheme of things. And the best way is, mother says, laugh at the face of the adversary. As Hanuman's life, he doesn't say, Sursa, I'll show you what I am. Ast Siddhi, now Niddhi ke Data, you better challenge me. No. He says, Mata, 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 karke ho. Jagan Mata. Lankini comes. He says, Mata, why are you torturing me? I have not come to take any. I have come to discover Sita. That's how he speaks. Lankini says, you dear, you are a little mosquito in front of me. You are challenging me. He says, see, you are like my mother. I am just having a little prank with you. Say, oh, so if you have a prank with me, I can hit you. He says, yes, I also as a child can hit you. Because child can do that. He says, oh, okay, do it. Then Hanuman gives that proper solid blow and she vomits blood. So he is playful. He is not taking, oh my God, what has happened? Nor is he trying to say, that's what we have to learn from that story. That look here, life is full of challenges. Don't get involved so much. If I have to go to ashram, the dog is barking, that dog is not my goal. My goal is the ashram. So, I have to defend myself, all right. But I don't have to prove a point that I am greater than you, you dog. Then he will say, okay, I'll show you. So, yes, there are psychic attacks. And even the psychic being in its journey has to face many challenges. And Shobindu says very beautifully, with which we can stop. He says, hell will vomit its hordes and heaven will meet you with pitiless denials. Cold and pitiless denials. And then he says something very beautiful. Nay, is then the cup of immortality a thing for the weakling to be given away without a price? See, that's what we see in that Steven Spielberg movie, Cup of Christ. You know, it is not what we are in for is something so beautiful. We have to value it. When we value it immensely, then we will go through everything. But because we don't value what we are seeking, therefore we, at every step of the challenge, we just start turning away. So challenges come, and why not? We grow through them. The adult soul drinks them like a strengthening wine. That's why a bit of Kshatriya Bhav is very important in yoga. If Shobindra says there are three stages of supermanhood, at the end there is the child soul. In the beginning is the camel man who has to just bear the burden of life. But in the middle is the lion man. And you have to go through that stage where you are a warrior. War takes the battle within, the battle outside. But he knows the goal and he knows that with him is Narayana. With the Nar. And he knows he is fulfilling Narayana's purpose, not his own. And these warrior souls then graduate into where, as you, the psychic being, where like Prahlad, like a child, you are sitting beautifully on the head of Kaliya. Kaliya is the life as it is today. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay.